is Wealth Wake Up with Dick Donahue on KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham and KGMI.com.
Good Saturday morning. Dick Donahue with you. We are back in studio this week. We were out for the last couple of weeks doing remote, but we're back in studio. We're live. We're here. And we're going to start out with our weekly wrap-up, as we usually do. And we found that the stock market has a strong showing this week. It drove the three major indices to fresh record highs. The S&P 500, for its part, closed above 5,200 for the first time with a 2.3% gain this week. The NASDAQ Composite jumped 2.9%, and the Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 2%. The gains were largely in response to the FOMC policy announcement. The committee voted unanimously to leave the target rate for Fed funds rates unchanged at 5.25% to 5.5%. This was expected and was not the reason for the increased buying activity. Buying increased due to the closely watched dot plot, which is included in the updated summary of economic projections, showing that the Fed still anticipates three cuts this year, despite recent inflation readings coming in hotter than expected. Fed Chair Powell's press conference following the FOMC policy announcement didn't deter the influx of buying. He largely reiterated prior comments, indicating that the Fed needs more evidence that inflation is moving towards its 2% target before cutting rates. Mr. Powell also said that it will be appropriate to slow the pace of asset runoff fairly soon. Rate cut expectations moved up this week, contributing to the positive bias in the stock market. The implied likelihood of a June cut rate rose to 75.4% from 58.8% last week, according to the CME FedWatch tool. The price action in Treasuries also contributed to the positive bias in the stock market. The two-year note yielded declined 12 basis points, that would be 0.12%, to 4.6%, and the 10-year note yield fell 8 basis points to 4.22%. We saw mega-cap stocks that have outsized impact on the index gains. The mega-cap growth ETF rose 2.5% this week. Meanwhile, the equal-weight S&P 500 rose 1.4% this week. Only one of the S&P 500 sectors logged a decline. Real estate was down 0.4%. Communication services were up 4.8%, industrials up 2.9%, information technology up 2.9%, consumer discretionary were up 2.8%. Those were the sectors with the largest gains. So looking at some of our daily summaries, we saw that on Mondays that participants didn't have a lot of conviction, which was understandable given a looming Bank of Japan policy decision overnight and the impending release of the Fed's dot plot on Wednesday. The conviction was shown as based biased towards the mega cap stocks. We saw the mega cap ETF close about 0.9% higher. Banks were weak linking in connection with the sobering downgrade of New York's Community Bank to underperform from market perform. The S&P Regional Bank ETF fell 0.7%. But on the flip side, the consumer staples sector was up 0.8%. It outperformed with the help of PepsiCo, which was downgraded to overweight or upgraded to overweight from equal weight. Reviewing Wendy's economic data, we saw that the March NAHB housing market index checked in at 51. That was versus 48 back in February. On Tuesday, what started out as a down day for the stock market turned into an up day. Notably, the catalyst for the swing in both directions was one and the same. That would be Nvidia, which declined as much as 3.9% in a sell-the-news response following the company's introduction of the Blackwell AI platform at its GTC conference before rebounding and closing the day higher. The turn in Nvidia helped the broader market get back on a winning course that was aided by short-covering activity and the lingering fear of missing out on further gains. As it turned out, the S&P 500 set a record new high, closing high. The two-year note yield dropped 4 basis points to 4.69%. The 10-year note fell 4 basis points to 4.3%. The gains there occurred despite a stronger-than-expected housing starts and building permits report for February, and the Bank of Japan exiting its negative interest rate policy, officially ending its yield curve control policy and halting its ETF and REIT purchases. A well-received $20 bond reopening provided some added juice for the Treasury markets. A well-received 20-year bond reopening provided some added juice for the Treasury market's positive showing. Notwithstanding the actions by the Bank of Japan, the yen weakened sharply against the dollar as it wasn't lost on traders that the Bank of Japan's new policy rate of 0 to 0.1% remains extremely low, and the Bank of Japan is remaining committed to maintaining an accommodative stance. Reviewing Tuesday's economic data, we saw housing starts increase 10.7% month over month to a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 1.521 million. That followed a upward revised 1.374 for January. Building permits increased 1.9% month over month to a seasonally adjusted rate of 1.518 million. That also was from an unrevised 1.489 million in January. So the key takeaway from this report is that the recognition that some of the unseasonably cold weather in January repressed housing activity, leading to a nice rebound in February that will keep the market soft landing or no landing outlook on the economy in effect. And then on Wednesday, the market finished strong on Wednesday, leaving the major indices at fresh new record highs. The S&P closed above 5,200 for the first time. The Dow Jones Industrial Average jumped 400 points. The NASDAQ gained 1.3%. The gains were largely in response to the FOMC policy announcement. The committee voted unanimously to leave the target rate of funds at 5.25 to 5.5. This was largely expected. The favorable reaction was in response to the closely watched dot plot included in the updated summary of economic projections. It showed the Fed still anticipates their three cuts this year. We saw Fed Chair Powell's press conference that didn't deter initial influx of buying. In fact, buying activity increased further while he was speaking. He largely reiterated prior comments indicating the Fed needs more evidence that inflation is moving towards its 2% target before cutting rates. He also said it'll be appropriate to slow the pace of asset runoff fairly soon. Just about everything anticipated in the afternoon participated. So reviewing it, Wednesday's economic data, we saw the weekly mortgage bankers application index was down 1.6%. A week ago, it was up 7.1. We also saw the weekly EIA crude oil inventories showed a draw of 1.95 million barrels, following last week's draw of 1.54 million barrels. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up Live. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. We will be back shortly.
Hello? Summer? You sound so far away. Oh, you're right. Now is the time to plan for AC. Yes, I've heard it's going to get hot. With Barron's preseason cooling special, you can skip the line and save big. Like free AC or heat pump big. With a deal like this, there's no better time to upgrade your whole home comfort system. Yes, get free AC or a free heat pump with purchase of a high-efficiency furnace. You'll stay cool and enjoy energy savings for years to come. Barron's home performance experts look beyond the box, finding you affordable ways to improve the comfort, health, and energy efficiency of your home. 100% satisfaction guaranteed. Yep, right now you can get free AC or a heat pump with purchase of a high-efficiency furnace. I'd call Barron today and be sure to ask about 60-month special financing. Pay no interest upon approval. Don't wait. Those hot nights are just around the corner, and this offer won't last. See you soon, Summer.
Barron, your full-service HVAC, electrical, and plumbing contractor. Our mission, improving lives.
Hey, it's Les Schwab Tires. Right now, save up to $80 instantly, plus $50 with financing for a total of $130 off a set of four select tires. Our spring tire sale is a gift to say congrats, you made it through winter. Now you can swap out those winter tires for a fresher set at a lower price. Book an appointment online today. Les Schwab Tires, ranked number one by Forbes for customer service and auto repair and maintenance. Limited time offer while supplies last. Terms and conditions apply. See leschwab.com/sale for details.
There's a lot going on right now, and broadcasters are on the ground covering all of it, bringing you the weather, the traffic, and breaking news, all while entertaining you 24 hours a day. Someone needs to tell you what's going on around the world and in our hometowns. And that someone is us. We are Free Radio. We are always there. We are broadcasters. Visit wearebroadcasters.com or text radio to 52886 to learn more. Furnished by NAB and this station.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, I'd work for all my life, and I had to start again with just my children and my wife.
Welcome back to Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you this Saturday morning here on KGMI. Gonna do a couple little housekeeping announcements here. First of all, I have my Seattle Mariners tickets again this year. I've had them now, I think, for over 25 years. Same seats, same location. And I have four tickets and a parking pass. And a little slow in getting the letters out to our clients. They have gone out this week offering tickets to them. But I do have tickets available for this opening series this next week. They open up on Thursday night against Boston. But I do have Saturday night's tickets against Boston. That's four tickets and a parking pass at 6:40 p.m., as well as I have tickets on the 2nd and 3rd. That's Tuesday and Wednesday, April 2nd and April 3rd. The Tuesday game is at 6:40 p.m. at night. They're playing Cleveland, and this Wednesday game is one of those really in high demand that typically I'm surprised I haven't gotten rid of by now. It's a 1:10 in the afternoon game. That's a Wednesday afternoon game also against Cleveland. So if you're interested, I need to have you give me a call at the office, 360-733-1200. I will be out there later today recording tomorrow's show, and I will go ahead and give you a call and let you know what I've got available still at that point in time. The second announcement that I have, I had a question come up. I was on vacation the last couple of weeks over in Hawaii, and I had a question about the podcast for these shows. And as you may be aware, KGMI has changed their website. It's no longer KGMI.com. It's MyBellinghamNow.com. And if you go to the website, you'll go over there and you'll click on KGMI, and below that you'll see podcasts. So the question came up about where'd the podcast for Saturday Morning Live go, but also for this show or for any of the other shows that are here on KGMI. If you just go to My Bellingham Now and go over there and click on KGMI, there's a tab for KGMI. You click down and you will find the podcasts. And so somebody wondered why they weren't on there anymore, and that was a little bit of a feedback that I had that I wanted to give. And if you want to give us a call, we're Asset Advisors. We're located out on the Pacific Highway next to Wilson's Furniture. Our address is 5060 Pacific Highway, Suite 101, Ferndale, 98248. Our phone number, 360-733-1200. And also, you can check out our website at wealthwakeup.com. While I'm talking about podcasts, you can click on the podcast link on our website at wealthwakeup.com, and that will actually take you to the podcast for these shows. So you can still get there that way, or you can go to MyBellinghamNow.com and click on KGMI, and you'll find the podcast over there. So I just wanted to maybe pass that message on since I had received some emails and stuff about it while I was on vacation, and I came back, and I looked at it on the computer while I was there and figured it out. But anyway, just FYI. Let's continue on with this week's market wrap-up. On Thursday, the market followed Wednesday's solid FOMC-fueled rally with another day of gains. The S&P closed up 0.3%. NASDAQ was up 0.2%. The Dow Jones Industrial Average was up 0.7%. Those were all fresh all-time highs. Russell 2000 actually outperformed the other major indices with a 1.1% gain. And the S&P 500 and the NASDAQ Composite closed near their lows of the session, though due in part to a sizable decline in shares of Apple. The price action followed news that the Department of Justice filed an antitrust lawsuit alleging that the company blocked software and gaming companies from offering better options. Apple said that they are going to vigorously defend themselves. And the loss in Apple and the sharp earnings-related decline in Accenture limited the upside movement in the S&P 500 information sector, but it did eke out a tenth of 1% gain. But we saw strength in the semiconductor space provided some offsetting support in the information technology sector following pleasing earnings and guidance from Micron. Broadcom was another influential winner, trading up with sympathy with Micron and following an upgrade and outperform to market perform at TD Owen. The semiconductor index climbed 2.3%. So reviewing Thursday's economic data, we saw weekly jobless claims came in at 210,000. Prior week was revised to 212 from 209,000. We also saw continuing claims at 1.807 million. That was also revised slightly. The key takeaway from this report is the ongoing trend in claims does not point to any recent weakening in the labor market, which encourages the Fed to maintain its hawkish rhetoric. We also saw the fourth quarter account balance come in at minus $1.948 billion. That prior was revised to $1.964 billion. And we saw September's S&P Global U.S. Manufacturing PMI preliminary came in at 52.5. March's S&P U.S. Services PMI came in at 51.7. We saw February's existing home sales at 4.38 million. That was revised from 4.0 million. Prior was 4.0 million. The key takeaway from this report is that the overall pace of sales approached the 23 peak at 4.5 million that was reached in February, even though the average 30-year mortgage rate has increased by about 50 basis points since that time, which suggests the market is holding up relatively well in face of elevated mortgage rates. We also saw February's leading economic index up a tenth of 1%. The Philadelphia Fed Index was at 3.2, and the weekly EIA natural gas inventories were up 7 billion cubic feet versus minus down 9 billion the week before. On Friday, the market closed this winning week on a mixed note. The NASDAQ composite was up 0.2%. It settled at a fresh all-time high, boosted by mega-cap components, while the S&P 500 finished down 0.1%. The Dow Jones and average was also down 0.8%, both of those closing with losses. Shares of Lululemon and Nike were the worst performers in the S&P 500. They registered sharp declines after disappointing guidance. Tesla was another notable laggard, with lowering production in its China plant amid slowing EV sales. And meanwhile, the FedEx is a top-performing stock in the S&P 500 after reporting better-than-expected earnings and authorizing a new $5 billion share repurchase program. There was no economic information of note. So we saw the Dow Jones Industrial Average for the week was up 2%. For year-to-date, it's up 4.7%. The NASDAQ was up 2.9% for the week and is now up 9.4%. The S&P 500 was up 2.3% for the week, is now up 9.7%. And the Russell 2000 was up 46.7%. That's not right. Anyway, that's a misprint, and I'm not sure exactly what the up was, but it's not that much, and I missed that when I was going through and editing my numbers. So whatever it was up for the week. Let's put it that way. You know, I always take a focus topic every week, and this week I want to take a look at the Consumer Price Index. It's a measure of inflation, measuring the average change in prices over time in a market of basket of consumer goods and services. It's broadest and most widely used index, the Consumer Price Index for all urban consumers, represents about 90% of the U.S. urban population. The CPIU reflects the cost of essential items such as food, apparel, housing, fuel, transportation, medical services, pharmaceuticals, and products and services purchased for everyday living by nearly all urban residents. If you exclude those in rural areas, the military, and those in institutions such as mental hospitals and prisons, prices are often collected monthly from 75 urban areas across the country and about 6,000 housing units and 22,000 retail establishments. The CPIU uses these prices weighted by their importance in consumer spending to calculate the average price changes, which are used to help gauge inflation. So we want to offer some deeper insights. Going to start out with the major groupings in the CPI weightings group. The CPIU consists of 200 categories. They're arranged into 8 major groups and with weightings based on consumer spending patterns. The Bureau of Labor Statistics calculates each category's share of total expenditures by totaling the expenditures reported by households for each item and then determines the proportion of total expenditures that each item represents. In essence, items or categories where consumers spend a larger portion of their income is going to have a higher weighting in the CPI, indicating the greater importance in this overall index. The Bureau of Labor Statistics now updates these weightings annually using recent consumer expenditure survey data to keep it relevant, accurately reflect shifts in consumer spending on various goods and services. The largest group weighting so far in the CPAU is housing, which makes up about 45% of the overall weighting in the index. We'll also take a look at the CPI owner's equivalent rent and national home prices. Housing, with a substantial 45% weighting, constitutes the largest share, with the owner's equivalent rent being the most significant component, with a 26% weighting in the CPI. In essence, the owner equivalent rent measure measures the change in amount a homeowner would pay in rent or earn by renting or his or home in a competitive market. The investment portion that comes investment portion that comes from purchasing a home is called the OER. So home prices are not factored into the estimate. The estimate is achieved through the CPI housing survey, which follows rents in a large sample of renter-occupied housing units. Each month, 1/6 of a pricing area called a panel is measured. All 6 panels are priced twice a year. This methodology causes the CPI's rent measures to lag behind the market as a whole. And then also within we have what we call the CPI Supercore. Since November of 22, the Federal Reserve has honed its focus on narrow inflation measure called the Supercore. Chairman Powell has highlighted its significance, stating that the Supercore inflation may be the most important category for understanding the future evolution of core inflation. Traditionally, core CPI excludes food and energy prices to provide a clearer view of inflation levels. The Fed's approach to Supercore inflation refines this perspective even further. Powell, along with the other senior Fed officials, categorizes core inflation into 3 segments: core goods, housing, and core services minus housing. The latter category, often referred to as supercore, has garnered a considerable attention. This focus stems from the Fed's belief that service sector inflation, unlike goods, is predominantly influenced by labor costs, a factor the Fed can influence through interest rate adjustments. Raising interest rates typically cools an economic activity, leading to a slower hiring or even layoffs, thereby affecting inflation. In contrast, they believe that goods prices are more susceptible to global dynamics like supply chain variations. So relative to the overall CPI, Supercore has remained much more stubbornly elevated. So all we're saying there is the Supercore prices are much more elevated than the general index, but the Fed's paying a lot of attention to it. Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up Live. We'll be back shortly.
The Mill at 7th, Linden's hidden jewel of a restaurant on Front Street. You'll find comfortable dining, top shelf service with consistently delicious food. If you haven't experienced The Mill, it's time to visit.
Hi, I'm Linda, owner of The Mill at 7th. I want to invite you to come dine with us. Our staff and I have worked hard to create an atmosphere that provides you with a welcoming experience with fresh, enticing foods, cocked, and a wonderfully unique selection of wines.
Listen to what our customers have to say. CJ says,
"We love to eat here. Plan on spending some relaxing time in an environment that's warm and inviting. The staff is so sweet and the food is so yummy."
Ashley says,
"The Mill is one of my go-to dinner spots. The food and atmosphere are always exceptional and the service can't be beat. If you want an amazing appetizer, get the apple crostini. You won't be disappointed."
Stop by The Mill today for an exceptional date night experience. Group parties and catering options at The Mill at 7th, downtown Linden on Front Street under the windmill.
I have diabetes. I'm at risk for pneumococcal pneumonia.
I have asthma.
I'm at risk too.
If you're 19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, COPD, or heart disease, or are 65 or older, you are at increased risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Ask your doctor or pharmacist about Prevnar 20, pneumococcal 20-valent conjugate vaccine, a Pfizer vaccine that can help protect you against pneumococcal pneumonia in just one dose. Even if you've already been vaccinated with other pneumonia vaccines, Prevnar 20 may help provide added protection. Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
You've got questions about your car or truck? And we have answers on KGMI's In the Shop. Dan from Bellingham Automotive, Brian from Dr. John's Auto Clinic, and Kirk from Angler Automotive are here to help. And we have a great new way for you to get your questions or comments to them. Email them to intheshop@kgmi.com. Then listen each Saturday at 9 a.m. or check out the podcast at mybellinghamnow.com. Once again, that's intheshop@kgmi.com.
The latest local news and important topics of the day from the West Mechanical Studio.
Harness the power of the sun, reduce your carbon footprint, and save on your energy bills. Explore the advantages of going solar with West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical. Find them at westmechanical.net.
Get the latest news and information 24/7 with KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham.
Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
CBS News Brief. Russian President Putin is vowing to punish those behind that concert massacre that has left at least 115 people dead. He's blaming Ukraine, which denies any involvement, even though ISIS has claimed responsibility. The BBC's Merlin Thomas is looking at video from the scene.
Witnesses said the shooting started inside the lobby. You can hear loud gunfire ringing out and see people crawling away on the floor.
Overnight, the Senate passed a $1.2 trillion spending package, averting worries over the partial government shutdown. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says it wasn't easy, but it is good for the nation. Some parts of the U.S. are going to need gloves and shovels or umbrellas this weekend.
Interior Northeast locations, upstate New York, much of interior New England expected to see widespread heavy snowfall.
That's Zach Taylor at the National Weather Service in Maryland. CBS News Brief. I'm Allison Keyes.
And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died. Who gave that right to me, and I gladly stand up.
Welcome back to Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you this Saturday morning. You know, we're talking about the stock market, and the S&P is hitting all-time highs and stuff. So let's talk a little bit about the relatively relationship that we're seeing here. And we're seeing a myriad of factors, including strong earnings growth. We're seeing developments in the artificial intelligence, and we're seeing expectations regarding the direction of U.S. monetary policy that has basically sent the S&P index up nearly 10% on a total return basis through the 20th. 10 of the 11 sectors have comprised the index are positive over this same period. The index closed at a record of 5,224.62 on March 20th. That notches 19th record high this year. This begs the question, where do each of the 11 sectors stand in regard to their respective all-time highs? So 10 of the 11 sectors that comprise the index are below their all-time highs as of March 19th. That said, 4 of the 11 sectors, information technology, healthcare, materials, and industrials, set all-time highs this year. So excluding the industrial sector, which set its all-time high on the day we pulled this data set, which is as of the 20th, materials sector was closest to its all-time high. It's down about 0.25%. That was set on March 13th. But at minus 24.93%, the real estate sector is furthest from its all-time high. That was set back on December 31st of 21. Communication services and information technology, which were the two top-performing sectors in the index in the year-to-date basis through March 20th, stood at minus 17.19 and 1.35% from their all-time highs. And as of March 19th, 332 stocks in the S&P 500 index, there are currently 503 in the index, had positive returns on a price-only basis this year. That's according to Bloomberg. But these 332 stocks account for 66% of the 503 holdings. For comparison, just 145 stocks of the index finished the 2022 with positive price returns. We saw a Bloomberg survey of 21 equity strategists found that their average year-end price target for the S&P 500 was 4,962, and that was as of March 19th, according to Bloomberg's release. The highest estimate was 5,400, while the lowest was 4,200. So obviously the analysts are expecting possibly some volatility. Don't forget, we got an election this fall. So what's the takeaway from all this? Well, the S&P 500 index has enjoyed remarkable returns so far, rising to all-time highs on 19 separate occasions through the 20th. Four of the 11 sectors comprised the index stood at record highs in 24. In our view, companies that comprise the S&P 500 index have been rewarded with persistent earnings and revenue growth, rapid implementation of new techniques like AI, and the potential for monetary policy to ease in the coming quarters. That said, the most recent Bloomberg survey of equity strategists revealed the average year-end price target of 4,962 for the S&P 500, and that's of 21 strategists surveyed. That figure represents a decline of 5.03% on price-only basis from the 5,224 where the index stood at the close on March 20th. So we'll leave it to the pundits to debate the day-to-day direction of the equity markets. But from our perspective, investors and long-term view should take some comfort in the fact that given enough time, equity markets have never failed to produce new highs. Let's take another look at another piece of the market, and let's talk a little bit about small caps and small cap sensitivity. Because while the market's attention has been fixated on these large cap stocks hitting their new all-time highs, we're seeing that small cap stocks have lagged significantly, marking one of the widest gaps in over two decades. Why have small caps trailed their large caps so much and have potentially boosted what can help boost small caps returns going forward? Well, long-term duration securities are those whose cash flows are expected to be received further out in the future. That's just the same analysis with long-maturing bonds. Similarly, growth equities, particularly small-cap growth equities, can also be thought of as long-duration securities, focusing on expanding their business and market share and less on near-term profitability. Generally, small-cap growth stocks are more sensitive to interest rate fluctuations than large-cap stocks. In fact, over the last 3 years, small-cap stocks, as represented by the Russell 2000 Growth Index, had a minus 84% correlation to the yield of the U.S. two-year Treasury. Large-cap stocks, as represented by the S&P 500, have only had a minus 12% correlation. So the yield on the U.S. two-year Treasury note has swung considerably over the last couple of years, in large part in response to changes in inflation expectations and resulting policy rates. These abrupt changes in interest rates have had a considerable impact on small-cap stocks, which often underperform large caps when interest rates rise. So when interest rates go up, we've seen small caps underperform. Yet, historically, they've outperformed when interest rates fall. So with signs of slowing inflation, the Federal Reserve expects a lower interest rates going forward that could be positive for small cap stocks. So as of February 29th, the S&P 500, S&P Small Cap 600 Growth Index was trading at a 22% discount from the S&P 500 index on a PE basis. That's despite historically trading at an 11% premium. So that means it was undervalued by about 33%, according to its past history. Should interest rates fall, small-cap growth stocks improve their fundamentals more rapidly than the broader market, we do believe there's a chance for small-cap growth stocks to outperform their large caps, especially when their multiple variation increases. That said, the interest rates may be an important short-term consideration. We believe that productivity and innovation are the key drivers of corporate earnings growth, which will determine stock performance over the longer term. But again, with markets hitting new highs, taking a look at what options are out there that may be creating different views of where we can diversify might be worth taking a look at. Going to take a quick look here, talk a little bit about working past 65 and what changes with Medicare. It's becoming, working past 65 is becoming more normal, but there are a few Medicare-related differences worthy of note when debating whether to stay an employee-sponsored medical health plan. You have a choice. According to Medicare.gov, working past 65, there are no penalties added to an enrollment in Part B if you wait until your spouse stops working. So if you or your spouse works for a company with 20 or more employees, an employer-sponsored plan will cover hospital bills first. Medicare Part A is contributing second. But if you're with a company with 20 or fewer, Medicare Part A takes priority over hospital-related, and small employer insurance coverage could come in second. If you plan to work past 65, stay in your small employer plan, it's important to ask your company what services or plan doesn't protect that Medicare might. When planning to enroll in Part A, there are a few factors to consider, which potentially dumping medical insurance provided by one's employer. One, enrollees in Medicare cannot make contributions to health savings accounts. This is something to keep in mind. You also find that delaying Medicare enrollment can result in backdating, in which coverage will trace 6 months prior to the date of enrollee signs up, but no earlier than the Medicare-eligible month. But in the event of hospitalization, you have different insurances which are going to take precedent. A small employer medical plan is going to come in secondary to Medicare. So it is important, if you're looking working past 65, take a look at your health care. If you're in an employee situation where you're over 20 employees, it's probably not quite as critical. But if you work for an employer or self-employed, it is critical that you sit down and compare the coverages and know what you're getting into. This has been Dick Donahue with you with Wealth Wake Up Live here on KGMI. We'll be back shortly.
When the ants go marching in, you need BioBug Pest Management, the latest pest control technology and long-term proactive solutions, lessening environmental impact while still providing you the protection you need. BioBug, service you trust, experience you expect. Locally owned and operated, serving Whatcom, Skagit, Island, and now North Snohomish County. Learn more at BioBug.com.
As a local, I know how brutal summer heat can be. That's why I'm not waiting to get caught in the rush. I'm planning ahead with Feller Heating. They've got this amazing offer. Save up to $600 in instant rebates with a new American Standard heating and air conditioning system until May 31st. With up to $600 in savings, it's a no-brainer. Don't wait. Head over to fellerheating.com today. Secure your summer comfort and peace of mind with Feller Heating and Air.
See your independent dealer for complete program eligibility, dates, details, and restrictions.
MyBellinghamNow.com is an exciting new news site covering Bellingham, Whatcom, and surrounding areas. Breaking news, community and business updates, local crime and sports reports, the stories that connect us and make this an incredible place to call home. Connect with our community like never before on the all-new MyBellinghamNow.com. And the best part, it's 100% free. No news hidden behind a paywall ever. MyBellinghamNow.com. Your community, your news, just a click away. MyBellinghamNow.com.
Hello, folks. This is Phil George. I'm an elder law and estate planning attorney here in Bellingham, and I would like to invite you to join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1 p.m. right here on KGMI for the Aging Hour. If you have questions about Medicare, Medicaid, long-term care costs, probates, wills, trusts, or anything else that has to do with aging, this is the radio show for you. Studies show that more than 70% of estate plans fail when families need them the most. Join us every Saturday and Sunday at 1 p.m., and we can show you how to set your family up for success.
'Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA.
Welcome back. Wealth Wake Up Live. Dick Donahue with you this Saturday morning. As always, we thank you for being with us. We hope you're having a wet, rainy day out there. Not real pretty. I'm going to go back to the Mariners announcement I made earlier. I know sometimes people aren't prepared for that, so I want to give it to you again. I do have my four Mariners tickets and my parking pass available this year for some of our games. And I will have available at this point in time, I have next Saturday's game against Boston at 6:40 at night. I also have the following Tuesday's game against Cleveland at 6:40, and Wednesday, the daytime game at 1:10 p.m. If you're interested, give me a call. Leave a message at the office, 360-733-1200. Again, that's four tickets and a parking pass. Okay, I've talked a little bit about the Fed meeting this week, but we saw that the Fed officials did maintain their outlook for 3/4-point cuts this year. They forecast fewer cuts than before in 25, following a recent uptick in inflation. They've decided unanimously to leave their benchmark federal rates in range at a 5.25 to 5.5. That's the highest since 2001 for a fifth straight meeting that they've left it at that rate. Policymakers signaled they remain on track for rate cuts this year for the first time since March of 20, but they now only see three reductions through 2025, down from a forecast of four in December based on their median projection. And Chairman Powell said that if the economy evolves broadly as expected, we will likely be appropriate to begin dialing back policy restraint at some point this year. He said that in his Wednesday news conference following the meeting. The S&P 500 index of stocks rose, as I mentioned earlier. Treasury yields and Bloomberg dollar index fell. Traders boosted the possibility that the Fed would begin rate cuts next year, or in June, I should say. The Fed's post-meeting statement was nearly identical to January's, maintaining their guidance that rate cuts wouldn't be appropriate until officials have more confidence that inflation is moving sustainably toward their 2% target. They said the committee judges that the risk to achieving its employment and inflation goals are moving into better balance. The central bank's chief policymaking Federal Open Market Committee said. They said the central bank has also reiterated its intention to continue to reduce its balance sheet by as much as $95 billion a month. That would be only $1 trillion a year. You have to realize that they're holding like $7 trillion on their balance sheet. Typically in the past, that has been less than $1 trillion. So peeling off $95 billion a month is not going to get that money off their balance sheet very quickly. They are scheduled to hold a discussion on balance sheet issues, and some, including Dallas Fed President Lori Logan, have called for an eventual slowing in the pace that they're shrinking their assets. So there's a little bit of conversation, I guess you'd say, taking place there. Market expectations. Well, ahead of Wednesday's decision in the press conference, traders saw a slightly better than 50% chance that the first cut coming in June. They expected the total to be roughly three cuts this year. While policymakers said the federal funds rate reached 4.6 at the end of 24, according to their median rate projection, individual expectations were split. The Fed's dot plot showed 10 officials saw three or more quarter-point cuts this year, while nine anticipated two or fewer. We also saw Fed officials that have emphasized the projections are not a predetermined plan, that the individual forecasts are subject to change based on incoming data and inflation in the labor market. We saw a key measure of consumer prices has risen more than the economists expected in the last 2 months. The U.S. employment rate has edged up to a two-year high that officials still regard as low. We're also seeing policymakers have also shifted slightly their forecast for where they see rates settling over the longer term. They've boosted their median estimate to 2.6 from 2.5. That's following speculations from economists that higher rates may persist in the post-pandemic environment. The change implies that rates will need to stay higher for longer in the future. As long as we keep spending money and signing budget bills or passing budget bills like we did last night, you can't expect interest rates to go down very quick because they're going to keep borrowing $2-3 trillion a year, That's got to get paid for. You got to entice somebody that wants to hold on to that debt. So I don't think you're going to see substantially lower interest rates, in my opinion. But he says, I said earlier here, policymakers updated their projections for inflation and economic data for 24. They raised their forecast for underlying inflation to 2.6 from 2.4%, and boosting growth potential from 2.1 from 1.4. They also lowered their unemployment rate slightly to 4% and to 4.1 in 2024. So a little higher employment, interest rates staying higher a little longer. I think you could expect that based on the path we're on right now. Okay, well, saw an interesting report that came out this week talking about taking Social Security early, which means taking Social Security early means taking it as early as 62, and that could result in a 50% cut in benefits. You know, I had this discussion yesterday with a meeting with some prospective clients talking about taking Social Security at age 62 because they're worried about the program will run out of money or they think they need it sooner. And it's no secret, Social Security trustees have reported that for years that Social Security funds are beginning to run out by 2034 if lawmakers don't pass legislation to change benefits, beneficiary retirement age, and or the FICA taxes that employees and employers paid are going to have to be increased or changed. But if you're motivated by fear that you'll wind up being hit with a double whammy that could cost you 50% for full benefits, basically what we're telling clients is if you need money, go ahead and claim your benefits. You might be able to reverse that decision, although it's going to be questionable. But if you don't need the money, you're claiming Social Security out of fear, it's like trying to sell stocks in a down market. So if you're going to take benefits early, let's say your full retirement age is 67, you claim it now at age 62, you're going to take a 30% cut in the amount of benefits that you're going to get. Then your worst-case scenario happens and Congress does nothing, your benefits could be cut another 20% on top of that. That would mean that you have a total of a 50% haircut. Now, the likelihood of Congress doing nothing is very slim, in my opinion. They're going to do something. We just don't know what they're going to do. But contrary to all those news articles out there that we see stating otherwise, the news of the 2034 depletion does not mean Social Security is going to go bankrupt. Social Security continues to be funded with FICA taxes that are taken out of payroll. And up until 2010, there was more than enough taxes to pay for Social Security's obligations. But when we hit the 2010 financial crisis, a lot of people lost their jobs. The first wave of boomers started to retire, and there was not enough money and enough taxes to pay all the benefits. That's when they started tapping the interest on those $3 billion trust reserves. And then that was pretty good until 2021. Of course, then we had COVID hit. We had more lost jobs, and we also had interest on the trust funds was also not enough to pay those benefits. So they actually started eating down or drawing down into the funds themselves. And that's basically what we're doing now. And that's why if Congress does nothing between now and 2033 or 34, those trust funds are going to run dry. So what does that mean? Well, that would mean that there are only about enough FICA taxes at that time to fund about 80% of the average benefit. So now, you know, nobody's going to be happy with the idea that they're getting 80% of the benefits. And in reality, the likelihood that Congress is going to do nothing and allow benefits to drop by 20% is also highly unlikely. Congress does not like to pick on old people. They vote in high numbers. By the time we get to 2037, there are going to be 70 million Social Security beneficiaries. That could mean more ticked off seniors. Again, they vote. So do you really think Congress will let their benefits be cut across the board? I think it's highly unlikely. They will step in, even if it's at the last minute, just like they did in 1983 when Social Security was in danger of not being able to pay full benefits. Social Security has never missed a payment in its 90-year history. But legislative changes, however, will have to be made going forward. Possibly, they'll raise full retirement age. But today's two-year-olds will have to live to 120. Possibly, they'll raise the income subject to FICA taxes or raise FICA taxes themselves. They could gradually increase the tax by 0.1% for 20 years. They can also go out there they can also have you adjust, work longer. There's a number of gosh options they have. They can increase FICA taxes. They can increase excess taxes on excess earnings. There's a number of proposals. But taking benefits early will also mean, in this case, if you take it before your normal retirement age, you're going to take a discount. There's one other factor to keep in mind, and that is the longer you wait after your full retirement age, you actually have an 8% a year increase. So you can actually wait up until age 70 to take your full benefits. Now, I had the discussion yesterday with my people I was meeting with about, well, you know, I'm losing all that money. Well, there's some factors that come into that. One is family life history. If you are going to more than likely die by the time you're 75, you better start taking Social Security as soon as you can. If your family is going to live to 85, 90 or older, then I think you may want to figure out how you can delay taking Social Security, take that longer amount over a longer period of time. Something we have a lot of discussions with a lot of people about, something we're willing to have with you. You can always give us a call, 360-733-1200. Don't forget our show tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock. Thanks and have a great week. And again, if you're interested in those Mariners tickets, give me a call, leave a message, 360-733-1200. Thanks.
Voiced on the show are for general information only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual. To determine which strategies or investments may be suitable for you, consult the appropriate qualified professional prior to making a decision.